Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Rico Muhammad. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. Hopefully, we will be joined by my co-host, Chuck Snow, here shortly. He's having a couple of little issues, but hopefully we'll get him up and on board here in a little bit. But without any further ado, we're going to start out this evening as we normally do. We're going to talk about the trend lines report really quickly, and then we'll get everybody else mixed in. So spot market availability slips, but capacity remains tight. Through the week of October 12th through the 18th, load-to-truck ratios fell for the second week in a row, a signal that truckload capacity has loosened. Truckload rates remains high due to the imbalanced networks and the tight capacity on specific lanes and markets. So this is one of the things that we've always talked about. If you happen to specialize and work in your market, you could position yourself to be one of the go-to people when it comes to moving freight within those lanes. Diesel fuel is relatively unchanged. It went up by 0.4 percentage points, so we're showing a national average diesel price of $2.40 per gallon. But let's take a look and see how those rates were performing over the previous week. Starting out with dry van, we're looking up in the northeastern portion of the United States, showing an outbound spot market rate for dry vans out of the Northeast at averaging $2.07 per gallon. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.26 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.65. Dropping down to the South Central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound rate of $2.26. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for dry vans at $2.59. Changing positions over to flatbeds, looking at the northeastern portion of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.21. Coming out of the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.63. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing an outbound spot market rate average at $2.72. Moving down to the South Central region of the United States, we're showing an outbound spot market rate of $2.33. And coming out of the West Coast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.18 per mile. Moving over to the temperature controlled or reefer portion of this report. Coming out of the Northeast, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.27. Dropping down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate for reefers at $2.22. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing a very strong outbound spot market rate averaging at $3, an average of $3 per mile. Very strong. Moving down to the South Central region of the United States, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.40 per mile. And coming out of the West Coast, wrapping up, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.67. And with that being said, looking across my lines here, I don't see Chuck just yet. But what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and welcome in. Okay, that might be Chuck right there. We're going to go ahead and welcome in Daryl Rutherford and Ken Olson. Uh-oh. Are you there, Daryl?
Yeah, I'm here. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening, Daryl. And Ken, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening. And I'm not sure. Hold on. Give me 1 second. I'm going to take a chance and just go live. Caller from the 402, who do we have here?
This is Ted Johnson.
Ted, all right. We got Ted up and on board. The only person we're missing is Chuck. It'll be a party once Chuck gets here. So So, gentlemen, I guess we'll go ahead and do a little table setter while we're waiting on Chuck. I think he's having some issues with his phone lines. I'm not sure if he's still at the office or what's going on with him. But here lately, we just had the new implementation of hours of service and everything. As motor carriers, how has the new hours of service affected your operation? Has it improved it? Have you not seen much of a change? And, you know, what are some pros or cons that you have seen from the new hours of service, or has pretty much just business as usual? And we'll start off, I guess we'll let Darryl, we'll throw it to you, and then we'll move around, and we'll go to Ted, and then we'll come back to Ken.
Well, thanks, Rico. We run the same lanes all the time, so we haven't really seen a big change. A couple of our guys have tried using it, and it's pretty much working the exact same. We have a little bit of a benefit with the fact that the half-hour break can now be on duty, but pretty much the status quo, and it's because we just do our lanes to Vancouver, Washington, and Oregon, right? It's pretty much everybody runs their logbook the same pretty much every trip.
Okay, I'm going to try something. Chuck's having a problem. I'm going to try something that we've never done before. I want to see if I can call him and add him to the show. So bear with me, ladies and gentlemen, 1 second. This is the beauty of live, live radio. So we're going to try it. I'm going to try it through a couple of different I'm going to try it through our format here. So give me a second here. Well, while we're waiting, I don't want to just Ted, how about yourself? How is things coming along for yourself and your operation with the new hours of service?
Well, with me, I haven't really seen it hasn't really improved or disproved anything. Of course, I've been doing some real local work here for the last 30 days, all within about 100-mile radius. So there's some different rules in regards to Nebraska itself. And the, you know, the logbook. So I haven't really got to experience the new rules that they implemented yet. So I don't have anything to add to that.
All right, gentlemen. I got my co-host Chuck Snow up and on board with us. Chuck, good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing better now that Rico rescued me. Thank you. I appreciate it. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Evening, Chuck.
Great to have you.
Hey, Chuck.
Thank you.
So, Chuck, I was just kind of doing a little table setter just a little bit. We just implemented the new hours of service, so I was asking everybody how has the new hours of service kind of affected their operations, if anybody's seen any changes or anything like that. I'm not sure what direction you may want to take the show in. I put Darryl on hold, but so Darryl, don't think I dropped you. I just put you on hold. We got a little air in the background there. So I just wanted to try to clean that line up just a little bit, but yeah, Chuck, so we got you up and on board now. Which direction did you want to take the show in?
Well, I think we should talk about, and I think that was a great segue into the show, is talking about hours of service. The other things I want to talk about are with this whole COVID thing and just the current state of things, what are everybody's biggest wins? And what are our challenges, and how did we create the wins, and what are we doing about challenges? I think that's what we need to talk about, because those, I think, most of us are going to share similar stories. Let's try to find similar answers.
Well, one of the things I'll kind of put myself, you know, be transparent about myself and my operation. One of the things that I have definitely benefited from with COVID is that people are at home now, and even though my customer, my customer does have stuff that goes to food service places like restaurants and stuff like that. But my main distribution point is actually to a grocery warehouse. And with everybody being at home and everybody shopping and cooking and everything, and with the restaurants and everything, I've kind of experienced more of a boom versus anything else. It's actually really been a benefit to me. There's been more opportunity to be had in the temperature controlled food service portion of the industry, in my opinion, because of everybody. You got a lot more people that are at home, a lot more people that are cooking at home. They're not going to restaurants, so they're out at grocery stores. They're buying groceries. So my orders and everything have definitely increased and definitely have picked up. And the restaurants that are still thriving and still are in business, of course, they just like the grocery stores, they're ordering more and more stuff because they have found a way to navigate through the whole COVID crisis and everything that's involved with being able to stay open and being able to deal with the whole, the whole different things of that's going on with the pandemic. I'll toss it over. I'll bring Daryl back up and on board, and then we'll go to Ken and we'll go to Ted. So Daryl, I got you back on. I got you back on live with us.
Awesome, thanks. COVID has been actually really good for the business because we specialize in LTL. I think one of the things we did right off the bat is we made sure our customers knew that we were supporting them 100%. There wasn't going to be any gouging. We run the same lanes all the time, same customers, so we did the same rate. One of the biggest challenges has been keeping my team safe. So what we've tried to do to keep everybody safe is try to find out what everybody's protocol is. If people don't want drivers in their facility, they stay in the trucks, they operate by phone. We've emailed bills awaiting the people to sign the email back. And the real challenge has just been keeping everyone safe. And luckily, through this all, we haven't had one case. We had one scare that we thought a gentleman was going to have it, but he tested negative. So we went out and bought company-wide masks so that everybody had masks and made hand sanitizer available. But it's actually been a really interesting experience. My team's found that the company supports them. Our customers have found that we support them 100%, and we are willing to adapt to procedures and policies of theirs to keep their employees and themselves safe. So overall, I really haven't seen a negative effect of COVID to us. It's actually been quite a success story on how to build better relationships with our current suppliers.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Has business increased during COVID, would you say, or has it just stayed the same? Have you done more volume through the till?
We're up 10%.
Wow, that's great. Glad
and
to
that's
hear
only because I haven't been able to get more trucks.
Right. And how are you making out, Daryl, in your particular business, getting drivers? Have you been okay for the most part?
That's been tough. It's been very tough. I'm actually looking for a local guy and a couple of highway guys. I am finding that some drivers don't want to make a chance change. One thing I've done to try to promote drivers to come is to assure them that they will be the only one in the truck. I won't switch drivers in and out. The only thing is me as the owner, I told them that if the truck has to be moved, I will personally move the truck, but we keep it sanitized. They're the only one in the truck. If the truck's got to sit for a week, I'd rather sit it to make sure the driver feels comfortable and safe.
Yeah, I've done that pretty much for years and years. I found that when drivers went on holidays, the worst thing you could do is put somebody else in their truck that didn't care about it. And then the guy comes back from his week or two holiday and the truck's a mess and he comes in and he's upset. It's not worth it. And then who are you going to find to drive a truck for 2 weeks? It's just not worth it. That's
correct.
That's the driver's home, away from home. I just want to share something I heard the other day that I thought was very interesting about team operations. And I heard it on, I guess, on the Road Dog Radio, because I don't want anybody to think I'm plagiarizing. But there was a husband and wife team, and they were being the wife was being interviewed. And sometimes when she goes to deliver places, the shipper or receiver will say, "Geez, you and your husband run team. Isn't that wonderful?" And this woman's, female team member said, "Yeah, well, anytime you want to think of what it's like, lock yourself in a bathtub with your husband in the bathroom for a weekend and let me know how that works out for you." If you've ever run teams, my God, nothing could be truer.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't get away from one another. That's for sure.
No.
There are a few weirdos out here though, like myself. My wife actually works with me now. We brought her out of her job into the office, and I pretty much spend 24 hours a day with her, and I absolutely love it, and so does she. So there are some weirdos out here that think it's awesome to be locked in a 4x4 room.
Well,
there are exceptions to every rule.
Well, my wife and I have been working together for 40 years, and it's worked out great, but we don't work side by side. So we're both working from home these days, and I'm downstairs and she's upstairs. And when we're at the terminal, she has her office, I have my office, and we may not see each other all day because we're both busy doing what we do. It works best that way. I don't know how we would make out, sitting next to each other. We've talked about it, and we would make it work knowing us.
Awesome.
I got on the show late. Did Andy Rathmore from California join us?
I don't think we have Andy, but okay. Ted, we wanted to get Ted. Let Ted jump in on the question of how COVID is how his business is doing with COVID and how it's affected him.
Well, at the beginning, it pretty much destroyed my flatbedding business. I mean, I was able to, with my relationships with my customers in Nebraska, I was able to, keep a steady week, but nothing, it wasn't any overtime, I'll put it that way.
Right.
With all the construction sites and construction jobs just halting, due to COVID, there wasn't a whole lot of extra things to do. But with the drive-in part of the business, at the beginning, I mean, that was as busy as much as I could keep the dry van moving. I mean, that part was booming. Now, fast forward, it's September, so fast forward to about June, where all the construction workers and construction jobs are coming back to get back to work, everybody wanted their supplies at the same time. And so lots of overtime to kind of make up for what I didn't get, I guess, at the beginning of COVID. But I guess looking at everything overall in the picture, my bottom line in business, it's just through the roof. I thought 2018 or 2019 were pretty good, but this really makes 2018 look bad.
Really?
This is so much to do, so much opportunity, and it has lots to do, so I'm enjoying it.
So, Ted, if you don't mind me asking, where is all that opportunity coming from? Is it from existing customers that you knew, or is it just opportunities that have hit you in the food business? What sort of opportunities are there?
So these are customers I've had for a while. They just got a lot of orders at once, especially with the flatbedding, with everybody ordering all at the same time now that everybody's is able to go back to work safely. Now that we've learned more about COVID, we know how to kind of – these construction sites adapted. Once they adapted,
right.
It just wasn't enough trucks to do it all at once, and I think some trucks are probably, maybe they didn't you know, maybe they didn't make it quite through the coronavirus era and was got taken out. I'm not sure, but this just seems like there's plenty to do with the existing customers.
Now, on your flatbed, how far were you going from Nebraska?
State, right, regional, okay. You know, neighboring states of Nebraska, not too far. Midwest is where I focus.
Right. So within
and
about
hot,
a 500-mile
lane. Yeah, and a really hot lane for me is, you know, Lincoln, Omaha, Nebraska towards Dallas, Texas. That's a really hot lane for me, and I saw rates in that lane that I didn't even think was possible, but that's just how bad everybody wanted their construction supplies at once.
So what do you think is going to happen with housing?
Well, I was going to ask, because housing, it seems like housing still is you still got a boom going on with housing, at least down here in the Southeast and in the Atlanta market. Is that not something that is going on out your way, Ted? I'm just curious. I'm curious to know, because here in Atlanta, they're still throwing up subdivisions. They're still throwing up apartments. They're still throwing up. I mean, the construction business is booming here in Atlanta. It's kind of been an anomaly, because from everything that I've seen, you've got a bunch of homeowners that are in forbearance agreements, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on. Housing prices are still increasing, but it still seems to be right now. It doesn't seem anything can slow it down this way.
As long as, in my opinion, they keep money cheap and they keep printing it the way they are, I think we'll just keep seeing this housing boom. I mean, I'm seeing the same thing in the Midwest here, seeing it in Nebraska. I mean, the banking industry, from what I can tell, you know, their business is down. And so anybody who can qualify for a mortgage, I mean, they're just handing out the money. It's cheap and it's plenty of it.
Wow. You know what? I don't think, and I hear you, Ted. I don't think that creates a great future for us doing it that way. But, you know, who am I to say? I think we need to be cautious. If any of our listeners or any of the people at the round table, I think if as far as buying new tractors, especially brand new stuff for the price of it, I think we got to be really cautious.
Because I agree 100%.
Yeah, I just, you know, all this money that's being printed. Ken, if you're on, I know you studied.
I'm on.
Okay, well, I know you studied economics in school. What's your take on this, all this money they're printing?
Yeah, it scares me with all this money that's out there right now, and at some point in time that's going to stop and someone's going to be looking for it, right?
Right.
And at that point in time, if you don't have anything in terms of support, we're going to go back to where we were 2008, 2007, you know, when the economy turned down and we had all this stuff that was happening with the banks and more so on the U.S. side than on the Canadian side. And it created huge issues financially. So we should, in actual fact, you know, be very cautious of what we're doing in terms of our future growth and our purchases, right? Just to make sure that, you know what, as we go and we buy one truck or 10 trucks or 100 trucks, depending on the size of your fleet, you know what, you're going to be financially stable in order to fulfill your obligations to the bank or whatever lending finance that you use for your business. So, I'm all for what is happening right now in the both Canadian and U.S. governments propping up and supporting small business, supporting the general population. But, you know, is there a fear? Yeah, I have to say I've got a bit of a fear, right? Am I going out and buying everything that I can buy because it's cheap? No, I'm not doing that. I'm thinking about what I really need, and if I need it, then I'll go and get it. That's kind of my take, right?
Yeah.
But go ahead, Chuck.
No, I think that's a great way to look at things. If you really need it, you buy it. But this is the wrong time just to buy stuff because it's cheap. You buy it because you need it.
Yes. Yeah. Just I just want to go back to Rico's original question to Daryl and to Ted in regards to, you know, what did you do through the original onset of the pandemic and so on and so forth. My business is within a 500-mile radius, and like you, Rico, I'm in the food industry. So I've had a real bumper year. Far exceeds my sales of 19 and is in close proximity to the sales in 18. And 18 was a really good year.
Yeah.
What we did right from the onset is that we have consolidators in New York and Boston, and we were taking the freight to their locations, and they were doing the last mile. Right, we weren't putting our drivers into situations like Long Island, where the pandemic was running wild, and we took the fear out of the drivers because they could just go to the consolidator, drop their freight off, and then, you know, go to their pickup and then, you know, come home. So there was only 2 points of contact, and nine times out of ten, paperwork was dropped in the back of the trailer and signed off. He was phoned. They left the dock, picked up the paperwork, and off they went. And the same situation happened at the point of pickup coming back into Canada. So my drivers really weren't in any contact. And you know what? With them traveling into the real hot spot right at the beginning, and no one getting anything, it created some confidence within our staff that we were doing all the right things. If there was a situation where a driver was unclear of a customer, we were making the calls from the inside, saying, "Okay, these are the situations that we're looking for. Does the driver have access to a washroom?" Which is, you know what, it's imperative. It's imperative that you know, that they don't get cut off at a customer's, right?
100%.
Where is there a truck stop around you? Tell us about the truck stop. You know, we're asking questions that we felt that were very important for the well-being of the driver. Again, you know what, we're like you, Daryl. We don't slip feed any drivers. They're the only ones that go into the truck. They come in every week and they pick up their PPE, take it to the trucks, and there is no interaction at our office with the drivers whatsoever. They come in, they drop the paperwork off. They don't come into dispatch. Dispatch is a separate entity unto itself. Everyone in our office has their own office. We're very lucky to be able to do that. Office-wise, we're all feeling very comfortable. And again, with the drivers, they're very comfortable because, you know what, they know that we're looking out for them while they're on the road all the time.
So this kind of opens up a new door that I want to kind of – I want to – if you guys don't mind sharing, I hopefully I'm not going to infringe upon trade secrets or nothing like that. But I'm curious to know, with the whole pandemic and the COVID thing happening and taking place and trying to protect yourself and trying to protect your employees and your customers and all that stuff, are you guys familiar or do you have any type of way of having, like, paperless billing, like, or proof of deliveries or anything like that where you can kind of do, like, electronic PODs and stuff of that nature where, you know, you can email the POD and the customer can sign for the POD and email it back or something to that effect? Or are you still kind of just going with the traditional, just sign the regular paper bill of lading and dealing with things from that standpoint? I'm just curious as to how you guys are handling those situations.
So, with our business, we're still paper. The drivers handle their documentation with gloves on, and we have yet to go to a situation where we needed to send an email with a bill lading to get them to sign off and so on and so forth. No one in the operations, we would take that precaution if the drivers felt uncomfortable. But no one has raised any issue in regards to paperwork for us.
Like yeah, I said earlier, in my operation, with my operation, we're actually using whatever the client wants. Some of our clients have no issue with the bill of lading. We have some clients that said, no, just let us know it's delivered by email. They're accepting an email for billing. And then we have some that we have to email them a copy. They sign and they send back because our client who's paying the bill wants that signed POD.
Right.
So what we start with in the first place is we always have a copy of the pickup bill of lading in our office so we can prove when we picked it up, the signatures, and then we have the delivery copy. So we always have a copy electronically in our system that we can send. But as far as actual electronic, I'm actually looking at the PCS software to go to an electronic billing so our bill of ladings are on the phone and they can just sign the phone and carry it.
Great idea. And I think that's the future of it. I really do. I think we're going to get away from. I would imagine we are done with paper bills of lading within probably about 24 months. That'll be the end of them. I think everything's going to be electronic.
I agree with you, Chuck. Just because of the pandemic and the scare, I think more companies are going to, as it calms down, can be more creative with how they do things and be prepared for the next pandemic that comes if and when it does so that they can have a more streamlined process.
Well, yeah, you're right there. And the other thing is it's the quote unquote, the speed of business. And every one of us has had to deal with, well, we can't bill it yet because Billy's not back from Jersey or from wherever. And we really would like to bill this thing, but, and the customer, we want to get that bill in for whatever reason. Maybe the customer's going under. And if you get your bill in by midnight tonight, you may have a chance of getting paid or whatever the reason is. And it's tougher in your business, Daryl, if you need original PODs for some customers and, you know, your driver's out in Boise or in Portland, Oregon. And he's not going to be back. He's got to take his reset. Ken obviously doesn't have that problem, and either does Ted. But I remember a time when Ken was running his trucks further, and he probably ran into it, and we certainly used to run into it a lot more than we do now. But we still, on our broker end, we run into it all the time. So it would be a lot better. We have to work, I think, as an industry. We have to work through some things as far as getting rid of paper. And the biggest thing we have to work through is the fraud. Because Lord knows there's enough of it out there.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny you talk about that, right, Chuck. We have a couple of drivers that snapshot their bill of lading, and we put it through the system. We scan it in, and we bill it out. And yeah, you know what? We don't have to wait for him to come in and turn over the paperwork. But that's only a couple of drivers that are doing that.
Right.
But you know what? I'm like you, and I'm like Daryl. That, you know what? Within a short period of time, whatever time that is, we will be paperless. Right.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Now, we're sending all our invoices and PODs EDI. Right.
Right.
We're not printing anything.
We are paperless, but we still have a hell of a lot of paper. And although we claim to be paperless, our paper bills are higher than they ever were. And, and we still sign. There's, you know, we pay a lot of people on ACH, but not everybody. And it's still almost a day's work for two people to sign and process all the checks.
Mm.
So, but we are heading towards less paperwork and really being paperless. I think right now it's just a dream and it's a goal, and we're getting there because I see the systems, all of the systems, including some of the customers where. You deliver the product to their door. They sign for it. But they will not pay an invoice without an original proof of delivery.
Mm.
And I'm sure everybody on the line has customers like that.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I do. And I know in some instances with some customers, there's actually more paperwork because now when you walk into the shipping office or the receiving office, you have to fill out another piece of paper saying that you have no symptoms of COVID.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Like I said, in some cases, it's just more paperwork and it doesn't make sense because it's just more interaction.
Yep. Great point, Chet. There is more interaction just to find out if you're sick or not. And I really think, let's be honest, guys, if somebody was sick and they were in Texas and they wanted to get back to Georgia or Ontario or wherever, or Manitoba, and they weren't feeling very well and they went into a plant to pick up a load that's going to take them back home, they could be dying and that driver is going to say, oh, no, I feel fantastic. I've never felt better in my whole life just to get loaded. Let's face it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I absolutely.
Yeah. So,
I have to say,
go ahead.
No, sorry. I just have to say that one of my biggest fears is that one of my drivers actually get it.
Yeah.
And because my business is north-south, right? I don't do any local stuff, per se, and I don't run the Montreal corridor like you do, or the Windsor corridor, that it could jeopardize my business in a matter of moments. Where all of a sudden everyone just says, you know what, Ken got it. I don't know where Ken got it, but you know what, we're going to the same place day in and day out. I don't want to run that risk.
Yep.
I'm going to stay home. All right. And then where am I?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know,
yeah. Or you could have a situation like we did a month ago where a driver did get sick and I had to make a million calls to actually just get him into a clinic because no one would let him go into a hospital or a clinic without a COVID test, and it takes a couple of days for the results. And the result was I was worried about the gentleman, so I got him to Superior. I got permission from Customs for me and my cousin to cross the border. And I actually drove out to Wisconsin, took a mask, and picked the truck up and got him back to Ontario where I could get him into a hospital. It gets scary during COVID on that sense. If someone does get sick, you really can't get them help until they get home.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Great point. It's a concern, and I don't think it's going away that quickly.
No, I think we have a long way to go, to be honest.
You know, I think I would love to see this thing over, but I don't think that's going to happen.
So I want to circle back around. Daryl, you said an interesting point. You said something that kind of raised my antenna a little earlier. You were talking about you run the same lane. Of course, that's something that we definitely advocate here on the show. But you were saying that as far as the rate is concerned, so I wanted to ask you kind of, if you don't mind sharing, do you advertise a rate? That's something that's kind of been a little provocative as far as advertising a specific rate. Do you advertise a specific rate on the lanes that you run, or is that something that you just kind of put out there once you establish a contact with a potential customer?
So I think the reason I've been so successful is I've actually ran this lane for almost 28 years. I did it for 17 years with West Air as a broker. But the first thing I did was I sat down and determined out what I wanted for a rate. I didn't care about the spot market. I don't care about contract. I figured out Drenco's rate. Once I work with a broker and I understand that I can trust them, it's a good relationship. I actually tell my brokers what our rate is so they can figure out their shipments on their own. So they want to shop around. I don't care if they want to shop around, but what they can do is they can bid a customer now. And what they can do is they say, okay, Drenco's always there. As long as we call him before Wednesday, he'll take our freight. Because usually if you call me after Wednesday, you're done. Like, I've got 5 trucks going out this week, and all we're doing now is picking up freight. We're totally booked already. So I'm not afraid to actually give one of Chuck's staff members and team members the way to rate their shipments, so they know that no matter what, they can move it for this, they can put their points on it, and if they can make more, good for them. If it pays them a coffee, good for them. But I have no problem talking with people about my actual rate. Some people are higher, some people are lower, but Drenco has their rate for their profit margin.
Which shows that you actually know your numbers. You understand your numbers. You know your numbers, and that's great. That's because right now I think that there's we were talking with Hank Seaton last week, and he brought up the point about the broker transparency has actually gotten a little traction, and now they're holding hearings on that. On the whole broker transparency situation. Chuck, you want to jump in on this?
Well, yeah. You know, I actually got into a pardon my language over the air, but I got into a little bit of a pissing match with somebody last week, believe it or not, on Freightwaves. And it was one of these brokers that or one of these carriers that was adamant about having broker transparency. And I will go on record. I have no problem showing our carriers how much we're making. I don't care. You know, there's nothing we're hiding. What I do care about, and the only one on this show, and me, I don't know who's listening tonight, but the only one at the round table that remembers any of this is my good friend Ken, who's sitting there with us. And he remembers the days prior to deregulation and, you know, how trucks used to have to get around things and drive around scales and do all sorts of things. And there were a small group of us up in Canada, as there were a group in the U.S. that pushed for deregulating. And the last thing that we want, trust me, boys and girls listening to this show, the last thing you want to do is get the government more involved in our business in any way. You want to just leave them alone. They can't even run our countries, and you're going to have them run our businesses? Come on. We worked so hard to get them the hell out of our business. And now we're going to invite them back in. And the situation that was created as a result of deregulation is incredible for owner-operators you know, people that are just operating one truck and they're driving it themselves and they've got their own authority, they can do it legally and they can build a business. And Daryl, you're a great example of this. You know, you were an owner operator for a carrier, and then you went out and you got your own authority. And in a couple of years, you built yourself a nice fleet. I think what 14 trucks.
We're actually, when I hit my 2 internationals, I'll be at 19, Chuck.
Wow. God bless you. So this is a, you know what, and this is legal, okay? You know, this is a legal business that Daryl's building that he can sell. Back in the old days when we were all young gypsies, those businesses weren't worth anything other than the iron because they were illegal businesses. And an owner-operator today, he can call around and he can get great freight from good brokers. Ken and I both remember the days of having to deal with some really, really, let's say, different
shady
people. Shady is a nice way. Listen, there was one guy he was somewhat of my mentor, and he ran a business with and Ken, tell him, you can vouch for me. He ran a business probably 35 years ago, did $20 million a year in revenue, 3 telephone lines, 2 telephones, and the man used to urinate in a bottle because he did it all himself. And those are the three characters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
A gentleman by the name of Sheldon Miner. And he was the king of the gypsy truckers. And, he gave a lot of us our start. But these were not, they weren't boardroom material, trust me. And they somehow got freight. And you had to go through a bit of a battle to get paid. But you did get paid in the end. But none of that, you don't have to deal that way today. You can deal with companies, whether it's, C.H. Robinson or Coyote or Trafix or, you know, any of the carriers, and you know you're going to get paid. And when you get there to pick up your load, 4 trucks are not going to show up for the same load. That's the sort of stuff we used to put up with. And things don't, you know, that's all gone. And we have a accountability. And if somebody's not paying their bills, you know about it. They're really not paying their bills. So getting back to it.
But now you have a new problem.
What's that?
Well, see, with this broker transparency, I disagree with it 100%. I don't care if you show me your rate. It's the selfishness of individuals now and not realizing that we all have to work together and everybody needs their piece of the pie. That's what brings successful businesses.
Yes,
and
I agree.
What happens is they want you to work for free, and they want everything instead of saying okay, because they're not running a business. They're just going out there and seeing if they can get. When you run a business, like I've said many times, Chuck, I love you because you're a free salesman. You can sell more freight than I could ever dream about. So I've got my rate. I give it to you. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Right.
But we do a lot of freight for Trafix now, and it's because the one rule my dad told me, never begrudge a man his money. But that's what we're getting into with this broker transparency. They're begrudging you making a decent living. They forget that you're dealing with 20,000 customers. They're just thinking they're one truck and I'm the most important, which they're not. We're all equally important. And that's where I think this broker transparency law is coming from, is people want to find out what you're making instead of saying, you know what, I don't care what Chuck makes. If he makes $10,000, great. If he makes a buck, sorry, Chuck.
I got to tell you, when I was more involved in our day-to-day operation of the fleet, personally, I couldn't care less what the broker made, and we dealt with a lot of brokers because, you know what, if the broker made 30 points, big deal. I got what I needed. You know what, I needed those 4 skids going to Nashville or Memphis. What I got was mine. And the other thing I will add to this is most brokers could not run a truck line, and very few truck lines can run a proper brokerage. And there are some around that do a good job. I think J.B. Hunt has done a good job, and Schneider and CR England. Obviously, those guys do a great job. But when you take sometimes when you take small carriers and they open up brokerage arms, they don't do great because they don't know that business. It's not their business. And what we're seeing more and more of, we are really a third party, but not just for the customer, so that the customer doesn't, like, customers don't want to hear, sorry, my trucks are all gone. They want a solution. But we are doing more and more work with more and more carriers, including some of the big, big ones, both LTL and truckload, because we're starting to be their third-party salespeople. They're starting to realize that how expensive it is for them to run sales teams. And they've got to give these people cars or car allowances, and then they have to have a vice president that looks after them. They need a director that looks after the vice presidents, and the costs just cascade down. They're figuring now, you know what? Just give Chuck 15% and get him the hell out of here and get the freight.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
You know, and that works. That's what third party is all about. You know, and we do it for some things too. You know, currently we are, you know, we've got a couple of lease trucks from Ryder. And when we signed up for that, it was cheaper for us to go to Ryder than have our own. It's gone back and forth like that for years with lease trucks. We do that with our shop. We third party it. I don't want to run a shop. I'm not good at it. But we have a third party shop. So, you know, some things you hire out to third parties because they do it better than you do. Rico was telling me the other day about a program that he's getting involved with Ryder, where they'll maintain his trucks and trailers. And you get the parts at a much better price, and you get service at a better price, and you get into a shop. Because even if you buy brand new trucks, when something goes, try getting into that shop. They're mm-hmm. booked up. So Rico has found the solution. So he's third-partying his maintenance rather than hiring his own mechanic. You know, it's the same thing. Does Rico care how much Ryder makes? Hey, Rico, do you care how much Ryder makes servicing your trucks?
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
As long as they get it done. They get it done and get it right the first time.
Yeah. And they're
going
to get them
because I tell you, the one thing that I've definitely learned, and this comes from being a small carrier, when it comes to getting your trucks repaired and getting into the shops, sometimes that is the most difficult thing. And I understand that a lot of people, that you have some people, you know, this is a philosophical thing. This is a really philosophical debate that carries on, because you got people that love turning wrenches on their own truck. And look, I can, there are some things that I know that I can do on my truck. There's some work that I can perform on my truck. Absolutely. And sometimes that's a good solution for those people that enjoy doing it. I'll do it if I have to do it, if I absolutely have to do it. I don't necessarily get joy out of having grease under my fingernails and crawling under the truck all weekend when I'm supposed to be kind of having some downtime. I would much rather pay someone to do that, hire that work out and let them do that job, because really the value that I would bring if I'm really being serious about developing and growing my company, the value that I would bring is actually going out and developing more business, not turning wrenches on my truck, doing something that's going to add more value to the bottom line. Not to say that turning wrenches on your own truck is not really going to add value to your bottom line. Of course, yeah, you could save a couple of dollars, but however, if you were doing, you know, and this is a discussion that me and Chuck had, if you are doing that work, then technically that's on duty. That's on duty time. So you technically have to log that if you are still working and driving the truck. So now you have another conundrum. If you're working all weekend on your truck, do you have any time to reset over the weekend so you can be ready to roll Monday morning, or whenever you need to go out for your next run is available? So these are, you know, And I know that a lot of times most people don't even think about that, and they don't bother even logging that time. But that is that. But now with the with all of the things that they have to kind of chain you down and get you in a gotcha moment, you got to be conscious of all these different rules and regulations that we have to deal with, and it's going to be it's becoming more and more difficult to kind of skirt these things. I know we've, you know, and this is coming from a real standpoint of this is something that sometimes we kind of skirt around on talking about, but this is a real situation. You some of these things you just gotta sometimes you just gotta give the devil his due, and you gotta do things by the book the right way. And I think that's something that we have to have you know, we have to be conscious of if we really want to continue growing our companies and being on the right side of not being caught up in a situation where you're sitting there in the audit and getting caught up on something as frivolous as you know, maybe changing the airbag on a trailer.
Well, Rico, you know, to that point, I want to just remind our listeners and even our friends sitting with us at the round table that FMCSA is looking at desktop audits. So they've hardly done any audits in the last 10 years. And now all of a sudden they realize they can make some money and they can give the carriers what they do want, which is a true safety rating. And because of technology, they're going to be able to do a desktop audit. Now, my understanding with these desktop audits is that you don't get a lot of notice. It's not like years ago, if you got a DOT audit, they would tell you 2 or 3 or 4 weeks ahead that they were coming in. Now you're going to get 24 or 48 hours notice, and that's not a lot of time to start fudging stuff, especially when you're running a business. So things that people are doing, like servicing their trucks, they're going to want to see paperwork and a paper trail on your service on your trucks. And if you're the guy,
right,
if you're the mechanic and you're the driver, you better be accounting for that, because you're really supposed to show an invoice or a time card or something, proof that you service that truck, whether it's changing an airbag or you did an oil change. You know, they're not stupid. And when they're looking at tractor 761 and they go, well, listen, we're looking at the maintenance file for this thing. You've had it for 5 years and you've put 600,000 miles on it. You've never changed the oil once. That's a question you're going to get asked. And how are you going to answer it? No, I got a new system in there and I never changed the oil.
Yeah.
I don't think, well, maybe you do. But those are the things that
that's a really good point.
Yeah. So
one of the other things that people are forgetting about when they work on their own truck, the biggest reason that I don't like it, and I have a maintenance program being a small carrier with a maintenance mechanic comes in, I have my sheets that guys got to do every 2 weeks, is I want the liability off the company in case that drunk driver hits my truck. And if that lawyer for that drunk driver's family can find out that my guy changed an airbag and he's not a mechanic, well, maybe he put it on wrong and it affected the braking of the vehicle. We're in a liability world, so I don't want anyone working on their trucks, to be honest, at my company. I'd rather have a mechanic. It takes the liability off. We have a record for the DOT as well, and it just makes it smoother. Guys can go home, do what you're good at. Don't try to be a jack of all trades.
Yep. You know, Daryl, that's why you have 19 trucks for that, because you get it. You know, you built a great business in a couple of years. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
So
appreciate
I'm looking
that.
At
that means a lot to
time,
me.
The time caught up with us. I'm sorry. We got about 1 minute left. Chuck, tell the good people how they can get in contact. We're gonna have to wrap this thing up in language. Chuck, tell the good people how they can get in contact with you, and we get up out of here.
Okay, you can give me a call. My extension is 203. Phone number is 800-388-4352. Or you can email me at chuck at Traffix.com, and I'll get you set up as a carrier if that's what you need, or if you're having some issues in your business, be glad to help any of our listeners. Or just send me a private message at Chuck Snow, CEO, on Instagram. Go ahead, Rico.
So listen, for Darryl Rutherford, Ken Olson, Ted Johnson, we definitely thank you guys for tuning in. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a minute to take up some time out to listen to us jabber back and forth, and we definitely appreciate it. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the podcast. We will talk to you guys same time, same place next week. God bless you. Good night. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. We'll talk to you next week.
Catch you on the
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming on. God bless. Bye.